You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
Psst. Hey, you. Yeah, you. Come join our Discord. The Mixing Music Discord server is filled with tons of awesome information and people. People that can help you out and information that can help you grow your business and to help you improve your mixes. So come join us and find the invitation link at mixingmusicpodcast.com. Hello and welcome back to the Mixing Music Podcast. I am your host, DK, and with me, as always, is my lovely co-host, Lugio!
Gotta do the mix. I don't know.
I know that you watch some Yu-Gi-Oh! Every once in a while.
I have played the cards in actual in-person contests and everything.
Yo, I found out one of our interns, Marcus, he does a lot of card playing.
Mm-hmm.
Went to nationals for Pokemon, which apparently is a growing like card game thing.
Oh no, it's
like
been
I thought it would have died out like a while ago, but apparently it's like huge still and relevant, which is interesting. And he talks about like Yu-Gi-Oh as well. So mm-hmm. There's some stuff, but I think his thing is mostly just Pokemon, which is interesting.
I think you had card commented games. Like how you came in while I wasn't here and that you looked at the top screen and you noticed that there was Yu-Gi-Oh game on the top screen in Studio
A.
Yeah,
I caught you playing Yu-Gi-Oh in the A room.
Yeah.
That, I mean, out of
I'll
all
do
the
that
games,
between bounces.
I mean, that's one of those things where, no, it makes sense. I'm being silly. I was going to say, it doesn't make sense to play a card game digitally, but it makes a lot of sense because then you have an opponent.
And the opponent is usually really good.
Yeah.
Versus
whether it's online
to, like,
or a computer.
Yeah, because a lot of times when you play with people and you meet them in person, they might not have played with a lot of people. So depending on how good of a player you are, you might not get a challenge, and sometimes you might run into that one person.
That's fair. So anyway, we're going to get into today's episode topic, which is a really interesting one. We're going to talk about relationship between kick, drums, and bass. I think we've touched on it briefly in the past. If we've done an episode on this, then I think it's a good idea to revisit this stuff, and talk about this. But I know many people have had problems and continue to have problems with their kick, drum, and bass, and how they kind of live together and getting them to harmoniously be in the same song, in the same frequency range, and get them to be separate at the same time. So I think there's a lot of like cool tips and tricks that you can use that are a lot more technical. For example, like sidechaining a specific frequency, or obviously in general sidechaining, but I mean, you could sidechain a specific frequency in like Pro Q3 or some other stuff where it's just cutting out a specific notch mm-hmm. of low end every time it hits. And I think we'll talk about some tips and tricks, but in general, what do you think? Let's talk about genres and differences in genres.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest factor that a lot of people have an issue with. I'll give you this example. A lot of times when I get hired to mix, people don't know that I came from like rock and metal. As both a player of guitars and whatever, but like even mixing, like I started off with bands and everything. So whenever I get hired by a client and they've had like a previous engineer, one of the not so common but common enough comments I'll get when I ask them, like, what was wrong with the last mix? Like, why are you switching engineers? There's got to be a reason, just so I know in advance. And they'll say something like, oh, you know, he was more of a rock guy. Like, he works with a lot of bands, so he charged me a good rate in that because it's not his genre. but he made the kick drums and the bass sound like rock stuff. Like he filtered it the wrong way and it just didn't feel the same as what I wanted.
And I think that within that realm, this is a common pattern that we see in rock music. Usually the bass drum is lower than the kick and then the bass in general.
Depending on the subgenre, absolutely. There's times in rock where like it'll switch. But yeah, for the most part, like a lot of times you'll find where like the bass just doesn't actually have bass. Like it's really tucked behind the guitars. Yeah.
And it's more about that lower mid-range frequency than it is about the low.
Exactly. It's like they're supposed to complement each other at that
point. So maybe instead of saying, there are genre cultures, right? As we always talk about. But I think the most surface level you should think about is what's above and below. Because sometimes you can get it to like fit in the exact same frequency, but most of the time, you kind of have to pick tonality. Like, is the bass carrying the low end, or is the kick drum carrying the low end?
Is the kick having a long sustain, or is it just a quick little?
Yeah, exactly. Like, is it more about the attack, or is it more about the boom?
Yeah.
And I think that this is all stuff that you should consider, and being able to like visualize, kind of what the song wants as well. Because you're right, like. Even in a hip hop song where the 808s are usually an octave below what the regular regular bass can do.
Mm-hmm.
They're really low, sometimes too low, and for audible hearing.
Yeah.
And of course, like your kick drums are naturally just gonna sit higher, like as far as like the note, the root note, mm-hmm. like the root frequencies are gonna sit higher in a hip hop song with 808s. And so figuring out what you want and kind of, but I mean, there's some hip hop songs where the kick drum is lower than the bass.
Yeah.
And the bass is sometimes non-existent.
Like, it's kind of a funny comparison, but like, I remember hearing some Rick Ross songs where he'll switch it up, where his mixes will either have a lot of kick in order to emphasize like the dramatic punch of it, or the 808 is just carrying the entire thing. And the kick is just to be heard as like a slap on top of the 808.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because they hit at the same time.
That's a pretty common thing. Like the 808 has a really fast doo, doo.
Yeah.
But that like changes in pitch too.
Exactly. Doo. So like the kick's supposed to be in and out so that it doesn't mess up with the pitch as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I often find 808 rhythms to kind of be like what a hip hop kick drum rhythm would be.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just like, it's kind of like replacing the kick drum sometimes.
Yeah.
Which is
a lot of times the samples will have the kick already in it.
So I think that's the first, yeah, exactly. And I think that's the first step, which is figuring out what the role of the kick drum and the bass is. Like, what role is of the song? So for example, like, even starting off with as simple as, is the bass supposed to be more rhythmic? Like, supposed to be a driving rhythmic element of the song?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it just some sort of harmonic bed?
Yeah.
Right. Like usually in like pop EDM stuff where there's droning bass and less like percussive 808 type stuff, it's usually more about the note that it's playing.
Yeah.
Like, ooh, it's like creating the foundational harmonic bed of the song. So like, and what role does the bass play? Like, that's very important to figure out. And this goes with everything mixing, not just kick drum and bass. But this is, you have to have a clear idea of what you want it to do before you start trying stuff. And I think going back to even more broader horizons, I think that's the first step is what do you want to do?
Yeah.
And being very aware of what it can do. Other than that, there's a lot of tips and tricks. Like Leslie said, this is the first step. This is the first piece of advice that I'm going to give. And this comes from... one of my mentors, Leslie Brathwaite, who is absolutely amazing. If you go listen to a bunch of a couple of my first episodes, I talk a lot about him, he's just absolutely awesome. Shout out to Leslie, and someday we'll get him on the show. I've just been too afraid to ask him because I don't know. I'm a jerk. I'm an idiot. Not a jerk. I'm not a jerk. I'm just.
I was about
an idiot.
To say. I don't
I'm
just know scared. How that
I'm just intimidated. I'm just intimidated. Jerk. No, but jerk. But someday we'll get him on the show. And I think that he said this all the time, because whenever people asked him, which is quite often, because he does hip hop, right? He's like, Leslie, how do you get your kick drum and bass to sit together? And he always says the same thing every time, which is, sometimes, do you want more kick? Sometimes you just have to turn it up. And that's all he says. Like, the fader is the most powerful tool. Like, if you want more kick, then turn down the bass. Or turn up the kick. Usually that solves 90% of that relationship problem. I do think this is, I don't know the scientific technical term why this happens. I can make guesses, but that's about it. Is when there's a bass with a lot of low end and the kick drum has the foundation frequency in that same low end region, every time it hits, that low end is non-existent. It really just starts to feel like the top end of the kick hits.
Mm-hmm.
Like it just like overpowers.
Sorry, it blurs.
Yeah, or it just feels like it just doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Like it's trying to push it, but it's just not. So it's just the upper end of the kick drum.
If it's in the same note, it potentially phased out. If the actual, I guess, alignment is off, maybe it phased out on that same frequency.
Yeah. Again, we're making guesses here on the technical reason why, but.
I mean, you'd have to really zoom in and see that.
Yeah, but oftentimes, I would say, especially for producers that are listening right now, 8 times out of 10, 4 times out of 5, that's the same ratio. Four times out of five, the producer has way too much bass or way too much kick drum. And there's usually producers that are not mixers have a hard time balancing between the two.
The concept that I keep hearing back and forth, because I'll hear the artist and I'll hear the producer. Like, the artist will send the producer, like, hey, I just got the mix back. Producer's like, what happened to my kicks or what happened to my bass, this and that? When in reality, you were hired by the artist to do right by the artist versus doing right by the producer sometimes, which is kind of a blow to an ego sometimes, depending on the producer. But a good producer knows, like, hey, we're just producing the record right now. We just want it to hit hard and feel right. But when it comes down to the final mix, sometimes that kick's going to get in the way of the vocals. Sometimes the bass is blurring up everything else that could be there. Turning it down can sometimes just clear up the majority of issues of like, oh, it sounds like they don't have enough definition. It's like, well, maybe one of them can come down. Like, it doesn't all have to hit hard.
And there's a lot of like beats where I've heard where the kick drum is way too loud, where the bass is way too loud.
Mm-hmm.
But honestly speaking,
it works.
It's a vibe.
Yeah.
Like, it's a vibe. There's many songs where the kick drum is just way too loud. Like, I can turn it down 10 dBs.
R&B music has that issue a lot. Like, you got a hip-hop producer doing R&B, and the kick's, like, smacking you in the face.
Yeah.
You're like, yo, that like, the bass can carry this one. Like, that can come down.
But sometimes, like, that's what drives the song is the outrageous kick drum. By the time I'm done processing it, it's, like, it's still way too loud, but it has this really cool driving effect. Like, it really drives and pushes the song forward. I don't hate it, but I do think that, like, from a technical point of view, you're losing headroom, which is a big thing. So talking about the kick and drum, the kick and bass, the reason why this is so important as well is headroom, right? So we've all heard mixes that are significantly louder than other mixes.
Oh, yeah.
Most of the time, it's because there's also a significant less amount of sub-frequency, sub-range information in those loud mixes. When low-end, because of something called the Fletcher-Munson curves, low-end carries the most amount of energy and is the least audible to human ears. So you have to push, like, that 60 hertz, you have to push that many, many, many times more than the 3K range, right? And because of that, when you're limiting it, if you have a lot of sub-range information, when you're limiting it, it's going to trigger the limiter before, like, faster than if you just turn down the bass. So this is why it's a good idea to balance. So anything where it's like really aggressive sounding, really loud coming out of Spotify and iTunes, it's because I guarantee it right now, there's a significant less amount of bass as well.
Yeah.
Like sub-bass. And usually with these, especially within the hip-hop pop realm, the ones that feel significantly louder are also that you can hear the bass, but out your phone. So there's like a lot of distortion or saturation going on where it's adding upper harmonics.
Yep.
So you can still hear the bass from your phone, but in a room with subwoofers, it's just not using the subwoofers half as much as another song where there's crazy amounts of low end.
Yeah. No, and that's actually kind of a funny one because I remember I was explaining, I forget who I was talking to, one of the interns here at the studio. They were asking, like, why does it sound like my limiter keeps ducking the music every time the kick hits? I just filtered a little bit of the low end, like filtered out 30 hertz, only to find out they were using, like, what is that plugin from Waves? Sub bass or not Max bass?
R bass.
No, not R bass either. It's no, that it, other it one that's
bass.
Like,
Vitamin?
No, no, no. No, it's like this black one, low air. That's what it is.
I've never heard
that. Dude, it is insanely deep how low you can get the bass. But because it's so deep, I saw the knob was like cranked almost to max to get the desired effect. I bypassed that thing. I filtered out like 30 hertz. Left the limiter where it was. He's like, it's not ducking anymore. I'm like, yeah, you just had way too much low end.
Yeah. And I think that's like a good thing as well. Like if you have way too much low end again.
Especially if your speakers can't reproduce it.
Yeah. And I think that's usually the first thing.
Because most consumer speakers can't reproduce it anyways.
Yeah. This is a good idea why to use some good pair of headphones. Is because usually headphones reproduce much lower frequencies than a small subwoofer in a smaller room. So if you have a large room and you have subs that are rated to go very big subwoofers and maybe multiple of them, you might have the same amount of low bass extension. Usually in a room with a sub, it's the bass is loud. It's not necessarily linear all the way down. But with headphones, they're pretty like solid as far as like linearity all the way down to the lowest frequencies, down to 20 hertz, whatever, as advertised. But
because I could totally hear that.
Yeah. And in headphones, I think it's a good way to check bass. But anyway, back to the kick and bass, the relationship there. I mean, there's a couple tricks that we can say. One of them is what I already said, which is on FabFilter and some other EQs, you could sidechain. So, well, let's talk about sidechaining in general, right? So how you do that is okay, so if you have a bass and a kick drum, you put a send on the kick drum track, right? And that duplicates the signal, and you have a compressor on the bass track triggered by the bass, by the kick drum. So every time the kick drum hits, the compressor on the bass track is ducking, and that's how you get that sidechain effect. It's used a lot in like EDM to kind of get, and that's where like that pumping sound comes from with that, like more of that that EDM house. I don't know, that electronic scene. We'll just say electronic. And you'll hear it a lot in pop music. That's not hip-hop at all. You'll hear it in some hip-hop songs, whether it's on purpose or an accident. That's culturally just not as prevalent in hip-hop. Unless it's like super distorted and it's a bad mix, or like you'll hear a lot of like badly mixed two tracks where they're like sidechain, but it's not sidechain. It's just the limiter compressing, like what you're talking about earlier.
At which point, the mix got louder, but it's because it has to duck all that low end.
Yeah. So doing that on purpose, that's sidechaining. And you could do that in the mix before it hits the limiter. And you could do that as well for specific frequencies. So going back into FabFilter Pro Q3, or there's a few others as well. Multiband compressor with a very narrow Q, narrow frequency range. You can dip the fundamental bass frequency of the bass every time the kick drum hits. And this is something that you should play with, but the only problem with that is that there is a slight delay because usually the compressor has an attack time, so it's not immediate, and you want to get the initial transient of the kick drum to come through. So
unless you enable look ahead.
Yeah, look ahead, that's part of what look ahead does. Another trick to go around this, and you don't have to do this, but this can help theoretically, is create a duplicate track of the kick drum, and you move it back just a few milliseconds, and you mute that track. You only use the send from that as your sidechain. That way, like when the bass dips, the kick drum's transient can fully come through instead of being triggered after the transient is already hit. Jason Joshua does, this is my favorite, most tedious, but my favorite way of doing this. This is a Jason Joshua trick. Instead of sidechaining, because in hip hop, the sidechaining sound, right, that comes from the slow release coming back when sidechaining a kick drum to the bass is you don't want that sound. You don't want that pumping feeling. So Jason Joshua has a trick where he takes the clip gain in Pro Tools and dips the bass track like 5 to 15 dBs on the right as the initial transient of the kick drum hits, and then slowly fades it back in during the length of the tail of the kick hit. So that means when it's sidechained, it's so fast and it's so symmetrical to what the kick drum is doing that you don't actually hear the pumping artifact. It just gives it a couple more dBs of headroom in the bass. And that actually works really, really well when you have two really, really low subby, a bass and a kick drum, 808 and a kick drum, and you want both to come through, the low end to come through without one eating the other. It does work. It's just really tedious to kind of go in copy and pasting all the clip gain. So usually it's like you have to tab to transient, copy the, paste the thing, and go down, tab. I'm just remembering it right now. What is it? After you copy the clip gain.
Tab to transient.
Semicolon, tab to transient, P, paste, semicolon, tab, P, paste, semicolon, tab, P, paste. And you do that like really, really fast, and that'll actually like copy and paste the clip gain every single time. In Pro Tools specifically, because you have to like tab to transient to the kick drum, which is the lower track. I put it below the bass. So semicolon brings the marker down, tab to transient gets it to the transient of the kick drum. Press P to go up to the bass track, press paste, V for paste, and then you have to go back down, semicolon, press tab to transient, press P for bass to go up to the bass track, paste, etc., right? Keep doing that. It's tedious, but it's actually really effective, and it gives you a few more dBs of headroom by the time you get to the mix bus stage, the limiting stage. Any other tips that you know?
I mean, realistically for me, it's been a lot more of just throw on look ahead. It made my life easier because I know that trick. I did it for a while.
Not all plugins have look ahead.
No, but
I've got
FabFilter, and I use FabFilter Pro MB.
Pro MB has look ahead.
Yep.
And you could set how many milliseconds too.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's right.
So there's also a bunch of other ones that I have, but you know, FabFilter tends to be my first go-to just because I like their user interface. It's just quick, easy. I get what I need done and fast. But outside of that, realistically, I like to personally just cut the frequency if I have to. Like a static cut, if it doesn't need to be there, if it's not fundamentally required for that thing when it's on its own either, then it makes my life easier. I actually have to sidechain less.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's a fundamentally contradicting frequency, you don't have to sidechain it. You could just cut it and then put a lighter sidechain.
There you go. I think this is a good moment to take a little pause here and talk about our sponsor. Thank you so much for sponsoring the show, iZotope. We love mm-hmm. iZotope products, and we talk about their products as well all the time. I know you use them a lot for mastering because you've been doing a lot of mastering recently.
Yeah. I want to say I'm doing like a 20-to-1 ratio of mastering lately.
That's good. So Lou's kind of been going on the mastering train, and you've been mastering a couple of the songs I've been working on recently.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, so this has been fun. And but we use iZotope products, the Ozone Suite. I use mm-hmm. Ozone, I've used Nectar, and I use RX. I've been using a lot of RX for this last album that I'm working on right now, finishing up, because there's a lot of noise. I'm trying to get that noise out. the dude used like hella old analog stuff, so it's just so much hiss I need to pull out. RX Spectral Denoiser works, mm-hmm. Denoise or whatever, works so well for cutting out hiss. And then, let's see, Nectar is really great for like vocal processing, the harmonizer, lots of cool stuff there. Anyway, we're really grateful for, iZotope for sponsoring the show. If you would like 10% off their products, you can go to iZotope.com/MMPodcast or you can go to that link to get a first month free trial for their monthly subscription where you get all of their plugins. It's really dope. Really highly recommend it. On that note, Ozone 9 Advanced, there's a module, a plugin called Low End Focus.
Oh, yeah.
And that's one of those things where actually on the last mix that the Chinese girl
mm-hmm.
that you mastered for me, I mixed the song. When I showed you the first time, you're like, hey, we just need a little bit more separation from the kick and the bass, literally on topic of what we're talking about. You know what I did is...
Low End Focus.
Yeah, I slapped on a low end focus.
I could tell when I heard it.
Yeah, and it's really weird. Low end focus does this thing where it separates the kick and the bass a touch, or it molds them together. You can do the opposite. You can
it kind of
separate
finds
it less.
The harmonic transient of it is what I've been.
Yeah, it's
that's
like,
what it sounds
like
to me.
Phase imager,
yeah,
transient designer.
Weird, but I like it.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I can't figure out what it is it's exactly doing, and too much doesn't sound good, but If you put that on an instrumental bus,
it can on. Yeah, I was going to say that. Like, if you just throw it on the instrumental and just throw only low end focus, you'd be surprised. Like, oh shit, my kick is popping.
Like
out.
10 to 30%.
Wow,
30% like max, and it just gives that little bit of separation.
I also like the smooth function on it. Have you seen that?
Yeah,
where you could blur it into each other. So if you're working on a 2-track and there's way too much, and you don't want to have to use a master rebalance on it. Try to use smooth on it, and you'd be kind of surprised. Like, it actually blurs them into each other, so it blends a little. It doesn't drop them in volume, but if you're just looking to minimize the separation, that works too.
That's absolutely cool. Yeah, and I think that helps a lot. And so, like, low-end focus from Ozone 9 Advanced, it's specifically in the Advanced package only, has been really awesome. The Advanced is worth it for the other thing, too. Which is Master Rebalance.
Oh, yeah.
Master Rebalance has saved my ass so many times.
It's saved a lot of people's masters. I get tracks that are like, it's all music, no vocal. And I'm like, okay. Or it's all vocal, no music. I'm like, okay.
Yeah, and you can like turn down the vocal. It's not perfect, but like for small changes, it's really great.
Yeah, like 3 dB max on that one. Like that, it can be a little exaggerated sometimes, but in a way that's like, yo, it literally is rebalancing the master.
It's so cool. It's so cool. You'll have to try it out to understand what we're talking about. But last thing here, this is something that I've been doing a lot too, is clipping the kick drum to get some extra volume out of it, get some extra like slap out of it instead of compressing it, which let's talk about that briefly. People think there's this, I don't know why, if you put a compressor on, it makes things thicker. There's this weird thought. I've never put a compressor on something and been like, wow, it's thicker, other than for its saturation.
I mean, if it's got a really fast attack and slow release, sure, you rounded off the transient and kept the sustain.
But it's making it thicker, like, no, it's making it thinner, like the transient itself is thinner, you know?
Yeah.
So be careful, do it on purpose. But clipping, on the other hand, if the kick drum it feels good, but it's just poking a little bit too much, putting a clipper on the kick drum also is a cool thing, and it kind of helps it. You can kind of maintain that volume, but still get a little bit more headroom out of it. Mm-hmm. But obviously, clipping, if done too much, doesn't sound good.
I actually use a clipper when I'm doing like analog summing.
Yeah, and don't like clip into, on that note, don't clip into the track, like use a clipping plugin.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't like actually use, I mean, don't, you can.
We're not talking about clipping in the red. We're talking about like clipping the audio itself.
The
track.
Yeah, with the plugin. Sir Audio.
Somebody's about to go home and crank their gain to max.
Yeah, the Massey Golden Soft Clipper is what I use the most of. Also, mm-hmm. Sir Audio has a clipper, which is $25.
Mm-hmm. I know Apogee had the soft clippers. I don't know if they still do or not, but built into their converters. You can enable and disable them, but they saved a lot of asses when it came to mastering.
And I cut you off earlier. What were you about to say?
I have no idea.
Okay, my bad.
My ADHD already forgot.
My bad. This is the classic Mixing Music Podcast thought process. We just keep on rolling.
Not Limp Bizkit style.
There you go. There you go. So I think that should help answer a lot of questions. Honestly, getting the low end right is going to take time and experience. And I don't think enough tutorial people talk about this, but you cannot negate experience.
Yeah,
you cannot think that you're just going to get it right by understanding these few tips and tricks. And these tips and tricks are not going to help every single one of your songs.
My favorite thing is the template salespeople. My favorite. See, I got everything figured out for you. You ain't even got to think about it. Just record your vocal and it's going to be fine. It's like, the end results say otherwise.
But I know a lot of people that make a lot of money from templates and stuff. And I will say that business sense, it is pretty lucrative. But creative sense, maybe not the best thing to use.
Yeah.
But we're talking about low end here. And low end is one of those things where you can't use a template. And you can't, you really just have to practice.
Use your ears, unfortunately.
Use your ears, practice.
Nobody likes hearing that.
And I'm still working on it, too. Yeah. Like, even us as professionals, like, we don't get it right sometimes.
I mean, we were, this week alone, we were talking a lot about, like, room correction. Because of the way our speakers play with our ears in the room.
Oh, yeah. Oh, we should talk about that the next episode, actually. Yeah.
Actually, because I'd like to shout out the people that actually kind of
Next episode.
That made a pretty cool discovery.
Yeah, that was really cool. I cannot believe I was so skeptical about it.
Yeah.
Anyway, on that note, we really appreciate anybody that's left 5-star reviews on Apple Podcasts.
If you left 4 stars, I mean, why?
I don't think anybody, maybe a few people have, I don't know. But once again, just want to emphasize that there's a few things that I think will be really useful for everybody. If you've subscribed to our email list for the studio or for the podcast or for me, you'll notice that you got an email this last week about top 5 marketing tips for artists. And if you're interested in free PDFs like that, you can go to links.dkmixes.com. Once again, that's links.deekeimixes.com. You get a free PDF on my store for under free resources. Download that, Best Marketing Tips for Artists, which was a really popular episode that we did. And if you want real-time mix feedback for free by your boy DK, every Monday night on Twitch, again, go to links.dkmixes.com. You can get the link to my Twitch. If you need mastering done, go hit up your boy Lou. And all these links are available in the description bio. But again, one more time, if you're on Apple Podcasts, please leave a 5-star review. Like, that goes so much out of your way. It's a free way that you can really help us grow. And we appreciate everybody's help. We've grown to be such a large podcast, even though we're just a couple of idiots that really love what we do. And and I would say pretty dang good at what we do.
I think so. I mean,
we're not good at this, like, video editing
my
stuff.
My mom always did tell me I was special. Ed.
Okay.
For all you guys out there.
on that note, happy mixing, my friends, and stay saucy.
1, 2, 3.
Yo, what up? It's DK. Thank you so much for listening to the Mixing Music Podcast. I just want to do a quick plug about Antares and Auto-Tune. Antares makes the original industry standard Auto-Tune that we all know and love the sound of. We are sponsored by them, so if you visit mixingmusicpodcast.com/Auto-Tune, we do get a small kickback from every purchase. Thank you so much for supporting the show. Please enjoy this episode.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.